right, everybody, welcome back. This is part two of our starting pitcher preview on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. I am Adam Azer here with Healthy Heath Cummings. Hello, Healthy Heath Cummings.
It's great to be here with you, Adam. You're my favorite podcast host.
Oh, thank you. Here is Crazy Chris Towers. Hello, Crazy Chris Towers.
Hey.
And Sick Scott White. Sick Scott White, how you doing?
You know, you can call me sick, and that's fine. I am pretty sure it's just allergies, because this has happened, like, this is the third March in a row where this has happened, and it's basically just dry coughing all day.
Oh.
And it's shredded my throat, and I sound funny. But,
well. For the listeners out there, the fun game to play, because I did this yesterday as I listened to Monday's show, which I was not on, is find the time in the podcast where Scott puts the cough drop in his mouth. It is a fun game, and I got it right. I got it right on Monday's show, so good stuff.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
It's already in, so maybe I'll have to double dip.
Well, you just
ruined
that game.
Wow, wow.
Yeah.
I was already wrong. How about that?
Well, I didn't want a lot of, that seemed like a trick question.
All right, so for the first 4 or 5 minutes, I want to talk about formats. We discussed it a little bit, but I don't think enough yesterday. And how your starting pitcher strategy changes in format and different formats. And the three formats we'll talk about are points leagues, head-to-head categories, and standard roto. I will define all of them so that we got a couple of questions, you know, asking what the differences are. So a lot of you probably know, but that's okay. And then after that, we'll just do ADP. So I'm going to put 4.5 minutes on the clock.
Do we really need to spend 4 minutes talking about Harvey, Shoemaker, Andreessen Moore?
What?
That's the band format.
Formats.
Oh, formats.
Awful.
Okay. Yes, we do, Chris. Thank you. All right, so head-to-head points. Our standard head-to-head points league has 5 starting pitcher spots, 2 relief pitcher spots, and how many hitters?
Starting, there's 9 hitters.
9, okay. So yeah. It's not a deep format. And Scott talked about it yesterday. This is the format where you are more likely, anybody should be more likely to go heavier on starting pitcher. Innings count for more there. Categories don't matter in head-to-head points. But starting pitchers, you know, there are fewer hitters, so that makes starting pitcher more important. In a standard roto league, which let's say is 5x5 categories, but no head-to-head matchups, just you accumulate stats. And whoever has the best stats at the end of the year, you know, in the categories, they win. The old school style of fantasy baseball, pitchers are a little bit less important than the points leagues because there are more hitter spots. And there are, you know, there are 9 pitcher spots, but there are, as opposed to 7 in head-to-head points, but a lot more hitter spots. So pitchers lose a little bit of value there. Head-to-head categories is really interesting. Because it does depend on a lot of things. It depends on a week. And head-to-head categories, the difference between head-to-head categories and roto is that in head-to-head categories, you are facing an opponent every week, and you are competing in categories every week. It really depends on the format of the league, and are there innings minimums, or can you just go with nothing but relievers? Are there specific starting pitcher spots and relief pitcher spots, or is it all just pitchers, whatever you want to divvy it up as, or is there a combination of both, which is probably the most common? So, Heath, you think that starting pitching is overrated in head-to-head categories leagues. We've already established that starting pitching is not overrated in points leagues, but in head-to-head categories leagues, tell me why it's overrated.
Well, to be clear, I think you also have to make sure you know how many categories and which categories you have. We see a lot more questions, it seems like, this year than we have in the past on 6x6 or 7x7 or 9x9 type leagues. And in leagues where you're adding more than the standard 5 categories, which are wins, saves, ERA, whip, strikeouts, if you're adding more categories that are like quality starts that are counting stats that benefit starting pitchers, then they're not overrated.
Okay.
But in those standard categories, you can win 3 of the 5 pitching categories without a starting pitcher, like at all.
And that really is where, in both roto and categories, you didn't mention that a big part of why starting pitchers are less valuable than hitters in those formats, categories and straight rotisserie, is just that the best hitters are going to help you in 5 different categories. The best starting pitcher in the world will only help you in 4.
Okay.
And so that's a big difference as well.
Yeah, there aren't that many hitters that are going to help you in 5 categories, though. I mean, they're very, very few. But All right, so you're okay punting categories in a head-to-head categories league, punting wins and strikeouts to try to win WHIP, ERA, and saves.
That's the other thing is you aren't going – like, I usually end up with a starting pitcher or two. Most categories leagues require you to have two, and then I'll just fill the rest out with relievers in a head-to-head category. You aren't necessarily, because of the volatility of 1 week, punting wins or strikeouts. You're at a major disadvantage, and you're going to lose more than you win, but you'll sneak in wins on those occasionally. If you have really good relievers, you're not going to lose saves. I don't think you're going to lose ERA and WHIP very often.
Okay, and then the last thing, you know, about that strategy that we haven't mentioned is that the reliever, since you're getting so many relievers instead of starting pitchers, you're taking them later, and you're using more early picks on hitters. So not only are you giving yourself an advantage of 3 of 5 categories, the ERA, WHIP, and saves categories, but in theory, you should have better hitters as well. Personally, I've never done that, and I hate it because I think it's cheap, and I don't think it's real baseball. However, I have no problem with anybody else doing it, and it is effective. It's not foolproof, but it is effective.
It's kind of similar to what your team is probably going to do this year, is use their starting pitchers' lefts, build a super bullpen that can pitch the last 4 to 5 innings of a game, and if they get into trouble early, maybe the last 6 innings of the game.
You're talking about the Yankees, and that's fine, but I still think that everybody should have a starting rotation of at least 5 starting pitchers on their team, but that's fine.
The Rays just said they may go with a 4-man rotation all year long.
The key that, and Heath mentioned it, the key is really just the volatility of 1 week, the volatility of percentage stats, which are, you know, two of the ones that are going to be rewarded the most in a week. Like, even if you have 4 really good starting pitchers, and if one just has an awful start, that ERA and WHIP is going to be so skewed for the week that, you know, you made a heavy investment in pitching, but you're still going to lose that if you go up against a Heath anytime one of those pitchers has a bad start. So it's, like, that's not obviously not something you worry about in Roto, where you have a full season for everything to kind of even out, and I don't think it's a viable approach in Roto.
That was my last question, Scott. Yeah, can you do that in Roto? Can you do that in standard season-long Roto with no weekly matchups? Can you punt starting pitcher?
I don't like punting categories in general, and you know, while you have a good chance of winning strikeouts with the volatility of 1 week with a lineup full of relievers, that's not going to happen in Roto. You're going to finish very low in strikeouts. So, no, I don't. It leaves yourself with no maneuverability in season if you're just committing to not competing in two categories and everything has to go right in all the others. So I don't like doing that. But I totally get it when you're banking on the volatility of 1 week, and it may be something I do in that format this year because it's maddening. It's maddening trying to win those percentage categories over such a small sample of time.
Last thing here, guys, if you have a 9, and I knew we'd go over time, but whatever. If you have 9 pitcher spots in a Roto league, how do you see yourself, you know, distributing them amongst starters and relievers?
I try to draft 2 closers, but I'm never one of the people drafting an elite closer. Just because half of the closers are probably going to lose their job at some point during the year, so I don't want to invest too much in it, but I want at least 2 because you need probably 60 to 70 saves to be in the middle of that category, probably 90 to 100 to win.
And if you're not investing heavily in closers, like, you can get 3 and beat the guy who drafted Kimbrel and Ken Giles in saves. You know, like, in a 12-team league, not everybody's going to have 3.
Well, but I just how many starting pitchers to keep it on the starting pitcher thing? Like, what are you, 6-3? Like six starters, 3
six,
relievers?
6-3 is the ideal in a 12-team league. If it's 15 teams, as we see a lot of Roto leagues stretching to 15 now, then yeah, 2 is enough.
And it is very common for me to end up with a reverse of that 3-6.
And it depends on the – if you have a bench spot, I might draft 3 closers, but probably no more than that.
I do think you – I agree with Scott that you cannot – I don't like punting categories in a season-long Roto. What I did last year and what I may try to do again this year is you're going to build a league in a couple of categories and then try to maneuver your way up in wins. Because the thing is, and we don't talk about this very much because it's not a great endorsement of season-long Roto, by the All-Star break, half the teams in your Roto League probably quit paying attention. And so if you are last in two categories, it's not that hard to make up 4 or 5 points if you're trying to pass teams that have just stopped trying.
Okay, that's a good point. So I guess you have to also know the dynamics of your league. Moving on now, let's get into average draft position. There are 4 starting pitchers going in the first 13, 14 picks. Kershaw goes 7th, Scherzer 11th, Sale 13th, and Kluber 13th. And no other starting pitchers go, or Kluber's like 14th. No other starting pitchers go until Bumgarner 26th and Strasburg 27th. So Kershaw is 7th, and ADP has Trout, Altuve, Arenado, Goldschmidt, who I think is going to keep on falling. When we did the third base preview, Goldschmidt was ahead of Arenado. Now it's Trout, Altuve, Arenado, Goldschmidt, Trey Turner, and Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw going ahead of Harper, Betts, Blackman, Stanton. When would you guys take Clayton Kershaw?
I would take him. I'm trying to remember the exact number. I think we all are. I think I have him 9th.
I have him 8th.
8th. Yeah, I'd have to pull it up.
Sorry. But I've got Kershaw 8, Scherzer 9, Kluber 10, Sale 11.
So who are the 7 hitters you're taking ahead of them?
Well, I didn't have that page up.
All right, well, it's...
In Roto, it's Altuve, Turner, Trout, Blackman, Harper, Betts, Arenado, Kershaw, Scherzer, Kluber, Sale.
Okay. So you're taking
Goldschmidt
the,
after the pitchers.
You're taking the 4 aces
before Stanton.
And
that makes it, yeah. I have Kershaw 9th, like I said, and Stanton is the additional hitter I have ahead of him.
So you guys are taking the 4 aces ahead of Correa and Machado, ahead of the 4 first basemen.
Ahead of Goldschmidt, yeah.
Ahead of Chris Bryant. Okay.
Yep.
Now, the one thing that we probably should remember about the 4 aces, as we call them, is
the super aces.
2 of them are probably going to go on the DL for a month. 1 of them's probably going to be an outright bust.
Ooh, I mean, I don't know about
that. Just based on history, like that's about 50% of starting pitchers.
Only one of them has ever been on the DL, right? I guess Scherzer was at the start of last year. That was his first ever.
Kluber was on the DL last year.
Yeah, he was. Right.
Kershaw has been on the DL a bunch of times over the last 3 years. Sale has never been on the DL.
And he's the guy that looks the most injury prone.
And Scherzer has only been on the DL since he broke out the one time. I think he missed one start. But yeah. I'm just talking about history. Just the way starting pitchers work.
You're talking in general terms of starting pitchers, starting not necessarily pitchers, these specific ones.
Yeah, like something like 40, but it's not. But Madison Bumgarner had never been on the DL until he was.
He fell off his dirt bike. Like, I mean, he's a durable guy.
That's fine, but last year, the top 4 aces were being drafted, and there was a tier of 4. It was Kershaw, and then there was a gap, but there was a Syndergaard and Bumgarner were both going within the top 20 usually. That's not atypical when you look at the history of drafting starting pitchers. Starting pitchers go on the DL at about a 40% rate over the course of a season.
And yet look at the hitters that are being taken ahead of them. Trout missed significant time last year. Trey Turner missed significant time. Giancarlo Stanton has a history of that.
This is why I won't take 2 of them. This is why I will not go with both of them, with 2 of the super aces.
I took 3 of them yesterday.
In what?
We had our head-to-head auction league that we're playing out.
Points league?
It was a points league. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I spent $147 of my $260 on Kershaw, Scherzer, and Kluber.
Right. And just to get back to the point, I'm not saying that the hitters are safer, but we've decided that these 4 stand out, just like we had decided last year that those 4 stood out and that Kluber wasn't part of that elite group anymore. And that Chris Sale wasn't part of that elite group.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably overstating the certainty with which these 4 will be the top 4 next year.
They won't be.
One of them will probably not return value on their draft price.
Well, that's fine. Like I agree. I mean, look, I think Scherzer, Sale, and Kluber all had their best season ever. And Kershaw had one of his worst. Which was crazy. So that is definitely part of it. I mean, I agree. Of the 4, who feels the riskiest to you guys?
Probably the one being drafted highest.
Kershaw.
Yeah.
But he could also also be the most valuable player in fantasy.
Right. But it's the guy who has had 3 straight years of back injuries.
Okay, well, but he's so much better than, like, Chris Sale. Sale had two straight years with, like, a 3.40 ERA. 3.33 and 3.41 in his previous two seasons.
Before last year, we were wondering if Chris Sale was more like what we think Chris Archer is right now. Which could be a case for Chris Archer being undervalued right now.
Yeah. I remember when Corey Kluber was not an ace.
Right.
Is that a shot at
me? Chris Sale.
No, I remember when you guys pretended that Corey Kluber had a 1.40 ERA when in fact it was like 4.10. I remember that very well.
Anyway.
Yes. Right. So there's some risks. It's not like these are the four safest guys in the world. And then, you know, it does.
No, I mean, it's a good point Chris makes. Like, we don't. There are other pitchers capable of doing what Chris Sale. If Chris Sale takes a half step back, you know, they could be close to what he is. It's just right now these four seem like clear standouts in terms of dominance and safety.
These are the four coming off the best seasons.
Well, I mean, it's much more than that for Kershaw and Scherzer. Like,
math-wise, these are the four that are most likely to have the best season.
Yeah, and Kershaw and Scherzer have been amazing year after year after year, and they're sub-1 whips. But, Scott, you have Scherzer ranked fourth because of injury concerns?
Yeah, other than Kershaw, the obvious ones. Just the fact that Scherzer's the oldest of this group, the fact that he had a couple of injury scares last year, the finger thing put him on the DL early, but then I think he had a shoulder thing mid-season that we were flipping out about for a while and ended up being no big deal. But that, in conjunction with the age, just makes him a little scarier than Kluber and Sale to me. Not, you know, it doesn't really matter to me which of those I get, but I have to put one fourth, and he's the one I put fourth.
Okay, so let's move on to the next group, and it's a big group, and we go into round three, where we have Madison Bumgarner, who I actually find it's funny that he is younger than all of the top four, Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale, Kluber. Bumgarner, 26th, Strasburg, 27th, Syndergaard, 31st, Carrasco, 34, and Severino, 35. Those are the pitchers going in the third round of a 12-team league. Bumgarner, Strasburg, Syndergaard, Carrasco, Severino. There are five of them. One more time. Bumgarner, Strasburg, Syndergaard, Carrasco, Severino. If all five are on the board and you're picking, who's your pick?
It's Bumgarner for me. I got a tweet yesterday from F. Zamo asking if it was outrageous to think Bumgarner should actually make it a big five, because he does look fresh coming into the year, didn't throw a lot of innings last year. There is an argument to make that maybe Madison Bumgarner is less likely to get hurt this year because he doesn't have the huge workload that like a Corey Kluber does and the long, extensive history of back injuries that Kershaw does. And Bumgarner was one of those elite four all the way up until he wrecked his dirt bike.
Do you think it's going to happen? Because it is a good case.
I think it's the – I rank him fifth, so I think it's the most likely to happen if there's one guy that's going to jump into that group.
He's probably at his best, not as good as the other four at their best. That's the one thing that I would say just differentiates him. His career high strikeouts per nine is 10. Everybody else has bested that. His career best ERA is 2.74. Everybody else has bested that.
I feel like it's what helped this case a lot is what the Giants did this offseason, because he was sub .500 last year. They were so bad. And I don't know that they're going to be playoff contenders this year, but they've definitely improved their roster. The other hesitation for me is that when he got back from that shoulder injury last year, his velocity was just a little bit down. He was less than a strikeout per inning. Mm-hmm. And he's
coming off shoulder surgery. Like, regardless of why it happened, he had to have surgery on his throwing shoulder. We can't just discard that.
All right, so after
Bumgarner.
I don't think
that's why he's not being ranked with the top four.
After Bumgarner, who would you take? Strasburg, Syndergaard, Carrasco, or Severino?
I mean, my number five pitcher isn't among this group that you rattled off here. So
it's Greinke, right?
It's Greinke.
I think I agree with Scott on that, too.
All right, so we do love that value. But, all right, you know what? We talked about this a lot yesterday. For me, I go with the safer guys in the group, and I actually think that you can make a case against every single one of them. So safety is sort of in the eye of the beholder. And I think we like everybody. We like everybody from Bumgarner, Strasburg, Syndergaard, Carrasco, Severino, DeGrom, Verlander, Greinke. Now, might stop there. That's 12 pitchers when you include the top four.
I'm not sure I like Carlos Carrasco in this tier.
What?
Oh, I definitely do. I
love him.
He's done it once.
Yeah,
he's been healthy enough to do it once.
Well, but just
I mean, Severino's
done it once. In 2015, he was Severino was better. But in 2016, 2015, Carrasco's best season before this, he had a 3.63 ERA in 183 innings. 2016, he had a 3.32 ERA in 146 innings. Like, I just don't – I don't feel comfortable taking a guy that doesn't have the track record there. And Severino, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with there, but I think Severino was just better last year.
By the way, Carrasco also had a 2.55 ERA in 2014 in 134
right.
innings. I don't
in
know if you said
26
that
relief appearances and 14 starts, yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's fine. Yeah, it's a good point. Good point. He was the number six starting pitcher last year.
The thing is, those are good points against the guaranteed production of Carlos Carrasco and the question marks around him, and they're not wrong. This tier does there are no pitchers that are guarantees, but this tier, they all have question marks. Zach Greinke had an ERA well over four just a year ago. Mm-hmm. Noah Syndergaard might throw 150 innings.
Sure. I don't think Noah Syndergaard's any more or less likely to throw 150 innings than Carlos Carrasco.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Is he more or less likely to throw 200 innings, though?
I don't think he's that much less likely.
I do think he is less likely. I rank Syndergaard and Strasburg both much higher. And these ADPs you're using are Roto. Both of them I rank higher in Roto than I do in points. Because I think on an innings per innings basis, they probably deserve to be in the same category as Bumgarner or higher.
Okay. So let me just get one name from you guys. Out of Strasburg, Syndergaard, Carrasco, no, I'm not including Bumgarner. Strasburg, Syndergaard, Carrasco, Severino, DeGrom, Verlander, Greinke. They're all available and you're picking. Who's the one that you're just, there's no way you're taking him?
Probably Carrasco for me.
I know who I'm taking of that group, so the others I want to take, but I guess Carrasco would probably be the one I'd least likely to take.
I think DeGrom is the one I'm least likely to take.
Because of the back?
I mean, he's not really fully healthy right now.
Right.
So.
Okay. All right. Cool. So that's Greinke ends at 41st overall, 42nd overall. And then we go about six more picks, and we have a group of pitchers, Robbie Ray, Yu Darvish, Carlos Martinez, Chris Archer. Robbie Ray, Yu Darvish, Carlos Martinez, Chris Archer. That's 16 pitchers. Remember, we talked about a top 17 yesterday. It includes Dallas Keuchel, but Keuchel goes about 10 picks after this group. So it's Ray, Darvish, Martinez, and Archer. I don't think we have to talk any more about Robbie Ray. Scott's much higher on him than Heath is. Darvish, Scott and I kind of talked about it yesterday, and Scott said it, I kind of feel better about it. I do think we could get a great year from Yu Darvish. I mean, he might be amazing value at 50th overall. His 14th pitcher off the board. Anybody disagree with that? Anybody think he's really like a mid-3 ERA guy? Yu Darvish?
I mean, he's got somewhat spotty control. He can be prone to home runs, but he's also, you know, maybe the best strikeout pitcher in baseball when he's on. So I think he could have a Chris Sale season, yeah.
And I think he could have an amazing season with a mid-3 ERA. I don't think those two things, like if he's a 3-4 ERA and pitches for a Cubs team that wins 100 games and he wins 18 to 20 of them and leads the baseball in strikeouts, he had an amazing year, regardless of a little bit of an inflated ERA over the rest of the Aces.
Well, that's interesting because I'd have to go, well, let's take a look at like 2016 and see the highest ERA in the top 12. But all right, so that's Darvish. But could we all see him having a sub-3 ERA? He's done it before.
Yes,
okay. It's possible.
Okay. Carlos Martinez, Chris Archer, who do you guys prefer?
I prefer Chris because I think...
Thanks.
I think there's a much higher innings expectation there. And with the kind of K per nine he has, it's a much, much higher strikeout expectation for him. And while I do give Carlos Martinez a nod in the ratio stats, it's not like, you know, he's not going to be a guy I see having a sub-3 ERA. And meanwhile, I could see Chris Archer pulling his below, you know, the high threes.
Yeah, I do think Archer's ERA should be lower than it's been the last 2 years. Maybe it will happen like it did for Robbie Ray last year. Maybe it won't. I don't think it's fair to put too much of a cap on how low Carlos Martinez's ERA could be, at least not say he can't be a below three guy because he was 3.01 1 year and 3.04 the next year. I expect him to win more games than Archer. does, and he will. I know you brought it up yesterday, Adam, and it's a tough thing to quantify for all pitchers, but I feel pretty strong saying Carlos Martinez will face considerably weaker competition than Chris Archer this year.
Glad you had the numbers there ready to go, because I was just, whoop.
But, okay. And he's been more of a mid-threes FIP guy. The one thing I will point out in Chris Archer's favor is when he gives up those fly balls and they don't go into the seats, they're probably going to get caught, because that outfield defense could be really, really good in Tampa Bay. Kevin Kiermaier, Malik Smith, and Carlos Gomez, they're going to cover a ton of ground. That's a big upgrade from what they were running out there.
Man, Chris can't stop talking about Carlos Gomez. Just loves Carlos Gomez.
Wrong Carlos, Chris. We're talking about Carlos Martinez.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. All right. By the way, seems pretty hard to be a top 12 pitcher, definitely top 10 without an ERA below 340. One exception was 2016. David Price had a 390 ERA. 399 ERA.
Well, won like 19 games, right?
He was 17-9, but he threw 230 innings, so he was not very good in Roto. He was probably like 16th in Roto, but he was 9th in points. A lot of innings, a lot of wins, 399 ERA. But I think that's probably a good benchmark. You want somebody below a 340 ERA if you expect them to realistically finish as a top 10 starting pitcher. All right, moving on past that, we have Dallas Keuchel, who is kind of in a tier of his own. Keuchel is going 64th overall. Actually, like, Keuchel going four spots ahead of Aaron Nola is a little disrespectful of Dallas Keuchel to me. They're 17th and 18th off the board. You guys feel the same way?
Yeah, he should be going well ahead of Aaron Nola.
Okay.
I don't agree.
Really?
Chris is the president of the Aaron Nola fan club after not liking him much before last year.
And it's a bit of both. I also, like, Dallas Keuchel, we are believers in advanced stats unless we're not. Like, Dallas Keuchel, we think this is a guy who definitely will outperform his peripherals because he's done it a few times. But he's been a 3.87 FIP and a 3.79 FIP each of the last two seasons. One of those led to a 4.55 ERA. One of them led to a 2.90 ERA. And now I know he was hurt in 2016, and we just don't care about that.
And 2017.
He was hurt in 2017, and we just don't care about
that. What do you mean
that?
We don't care about that? Of course we care about it. That's why he goes in the 60s. That's why he goes in round six. I mean, the guy won the Cy Young, and the guy had a sub-2 ERA before he got hurt last year. So if we didn't care about Dallas Keuchel's injuries, he'd be a second-round pick. He's awesome.
Is ground ball rate not considered an advanced stat?
He did have a sub-2 ERA before his injury last year.
I know he did. He's incredible.
It takes into account ground ball rate.
It takes into account home run rate, but
which is,
I mean, when you're like, Dallas Keuchel is in a class of his own in terms of getting hitters to pound the ball into the ground.
Absolutely is.
Yeah,
he has a 3.65 ERA for his career and a 3.72 FIP.
I want to clarify my stance. I don't think Dallas Keuchel is a value here. I think he is being drafted exactly where I have him ranked. And that's perfectly fine. My biggest thing is Aaron Nola is more being drafted on what if he does what we think he can do. Mm-hmm. He's not being drafted himself based on what he has done. And he is somebody that's not outperformed his FIP. In fact, he's been the exact opposite direction the last 2 years.
He was probably better than Dallas Keuchel last year. He wasn't that much worse than Dallas Keuchel in 2016.
He has never won a Cy Young.
He's worse than Keuchel. Give me a break. Come on.
He
now.
Could be better than Keuchel this year. I don't believe for his career. He's given us 356 innings of a 3.94 ERA. I'd like to see him throw 200 innings. I thought when he came into the league, he might not strike out at as many guys as some of the elite pitchers, but he looks really, really safe. That's not been what he's been so far, but now he's striking more people out.
The injury risk for Aaron Nola is probably not talked about enough. Like, he's had elbow scares each of his two seasons in the majors. I think that's a fair point.
So tell me, the guys going behind Nola, I'm going to say their names. Tell me if you take them ahead of Aaron Nola. Jose Quintana.
Yes.
Scott, I'm going to jump in.
No.
You'd rather
have happily. Jose Quintana is going to bounce back.
But I don't think you have to take Jose Quintana. Jose Quintana often, I found, in the 90 range.
Well, he's going 72nd on Fantasy Pros.
Yeah, he seems to be ranked higher across the industry than he is on our site specifically, which, you know, I mean, it's like this tier of pitchers, I feel like there's just like the previous tier. There's a lot of interchangeability. It's just
take a stand.
It's not worth it. Like, I feel like my stand is I value the previous tier a lot more than this tier, because I feel like for the most part, this tier very unlikely to ascend to the next tier.
I want to hear the rest of the names in this tier, because there's four guys that I think should be in this tier that I think absolutely belong in the discussion with the Carmart, Archer, Robbie Ray.
Okay, great. All right, so let's do it. So I'm going to not include Keuchel here, but then it's Nola, the 18th starting pitcher off the board, Quintana, Ohtani, Paxton, and Garrett Cole. Nola, Quintana, Shohei Ohtani, Paxton, and Garrett Cole.
Yeah, for me, Paxton, Cole, and Quintana all belong in that discussion with Keuchel, Ray, Archer, Martinez. And there's one name that didn't get in that group that's apparently a very good value. I have no idea why Shohei Ohtani's included in that group.
The name.
And you're talking about the guy who's not in the group that's a good value is Masahiro Tanaka?
Absolutely.
23rd SP off the board, but 12 picks after number 22, Garrett Cole, 89th overall for Masahiro Tanaka. What is that, round 8 or something? Yeah, that's round 8. So round 6 and 7 are Nola, Quintana, Ohtani, Paxton, and Cole, and then Tanaka's in round 8. Scott, you don't like that group? I mean, you don't take part in that group, because you usually have two or three of the first 17, and then you kind of skip this next group?
No, I take part in that group. I just know what I'm getting into, and what I'm getting into is second rate pitchers. I mean, these guys aren't like, you're not going to draft Aaron Nola and expect him to shock the world and put up Noah Syndergaard like numbers. Like, there's a clear distinction between those tiers, and it's a pretty severe one.
Don't people think that Nola's capable of that?
I think a lot of people do.
This is absolutely my favorite tier of pitchers to draft from. This is my favorite part of the draft, to start getting pitchers. And I don't see why Aaron Nola couldn't be Luis Severino this year.
Well, he doesn't throw nearly as hard.
Fine. Although his velocity did jump almost 2 miles per hour last season.
Dude, you know what? He has had amazing stretches.
Mm-hmm.
And he's followed them up with just mysteriously awful stretches. So he's shown it in spurts. But actually, I think we're talking way too much about Nola and not enough about Paxton. Paxton, well, that's just my personal opinion. I think Paxton's better than Nola. I would take him over.
Paxton
Nola.
Could be an ace.
Paxton's a better pitcher than Robbie Ray.
Yeah, Scott, how do you feel about Paxton? Because I feel like Paxton is the 23rd pitcher, 21st pitcher off the board, and maybe one of the most likely in this range to be a top 5 pitcher. It would take a lot of innings. Maybe top 8. Lower the bar
yes,
a little bit.
Yes, I don't disagree with anything you've said. I love James Paxton inning for inning. I think inning for inning, he kind of is a left-handed Noah Syndergaard. I would be shocked. I would fall out of my chair if he threw 200 innings this year. Like, it's just, it does not seem realistic to me to even hope for that. Mm-hmm. That's the point I'm trying to make is, like, yeah, I mean, there will probably be somebody like Luis Severino did last year, who had never thrown 200 innings before, who does and does it quite well. But, you know, as recently as 3 or 4 years ago, we would probably look at this group and say, hey, this guy's ready to take that step to 200 innings. So is this guy. So is this guy. So is this guy. And it's just like, no, you can't assume that anymore. Those aces are going to so outclass them in that area that they really don't. Even if they're as good inning for inning, you just can't count on them measuring up to them in terms of overall production.
Yeah, but nobody threw more than 215 last year. So if he gets to 190 innings, isn't that kind of like being a 200-inning pitcher 2 years ago?
I mean, I'm choosing 200 because it's a round number. I'd be pretty surprised if he got to 190.
Okay. All right, so, yeah, it's a fun group with a lot of potential, and I would be taking these guys as my number 3 starting pitcher. Chris, you'd be taking them as your number 1?
It depends how the draft goes. I have taken James Paxton as my number 1 pitcher. I've taken Masahiro Tanaka as my number 1 pitcher. I've taken Dallas Keuchel as my number 1 this preseason. It depends.
And I think you can get away with taking Garrett Cole as your number 1. I mean, I know it was 2 years ago But he was fourth in the Cy Young voting. He won 19 games with a 2.6 ERA over 208 innings.
Wasn't it 3 years ago, though?
It was 2015. Oh, he had a three-year stretch up until last year's not good year. In fact, 4 years, basically. The first 4 years of his career, his FIP was never higher than 3.33.
Yeah.
And he's going to a team that we think is maybe the smartest in baseball.
That is, I think, the best case for Gerrit Cole, is that in Pittsburgh, he threw his fastball way too much. That is Pittsburgh's thing. They want you to throw your fastball a whole bunch. And his breaking ball and changeup are better than his fastball in terms of the results that he's garnered from them in the majors. And so if he starts throwing those pitches more, stops being a 65% fastball guy, starts being like a 55%. He doesn't have to be Lance McCullers and throw his curveball 50% of the time.
But the thing is, he's going to the team that allows Lance McCullers to throw his curve. Like,
right.
The Astros.
And the question could be, because Justin Verlander, I think, also changed his usage. The
yeah.
question is whether Gerrit Cole wants to be that.
I would not be surprised if Gerrit Cole's a top 10 pitcher at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Astros have a track record. You know, we talk about pitchers that are already good, but, I mean, Keuchel wasn't expected to be good. Colin McHugh,
Charlie Morton,
like yeah, they mine true. The data and say, this is what you need to do to succeed. And the pitchers who follow through on it have become emerged out of nowhere to become these great fantasy options.
Finish it off with this, Cole or Paxton?
I prefer Paxton, but
I think
Cole
has
similar upside.
I like Paxton better. In Roto, I'll take Cole in points because there's no reason to expect that Gerrit Cole won't throw 30 or 40 more innings than him.
And we know from yesterday's show, he thinks Shohei Ohtani going way too early, 73rd overall, just because he's not going to pitch that many innings. How many do you expect? 150?
If you want to write a fantasy baseball bust article, just put Shohei Ohtani in it, and you've got a fantasy baseball bust article.
Clickbait.
I'll give him 150. That's fine.
Okay.
I know that he has a lot of talent, and there's already been times this spring where he's thrown pitches and you're like, oh man, I just think it's really, really too much to ask of anyone to make this adjustment to the major leagues and try to do it as a hitter and pitcher at the same time.
Oh, to be clear, I think he's awesome. I don't think there's any question really. Like he looks like a can't miss prospect. The stuff is incredible. 95 mile an hour fastball. His velocity band is, 71 mile an hour curveball. The splitter is legit. The slider is legit. His ceiling's 150 inning.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to me for me too. Like I like him. Like my concerns aren't for his performance aren't as great as Heath's are. And there's certainly a point where I would take him, but it's more around like the Rich Hill range because I think the innings ceiling is similar.
If Aaron Nola stays healthy, he's throwing 200 innings. He averaged 6 1/3 innings per start last year.
All right, this
Shohei
is Shohei Ohtani.
Not.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani we're talking about here. Next group of starting pitchers. And yeah, it's going to get probably a little bit less exciting. But Tanaka is in the next group, and we think he's good value at 89th overall, 12 picks behind Gerrit Cole, 11, 12 picks. Then Jake Arrieta, and then a little bit of a gap. But what do you think about Tanaka and Arrieta rounding out the top 24, 23 and 24? They're both going in round 8, and then we'll get into round 9.
Love Tanaka at that price. Don't really like Jake Arrieta at that price.
I was already the lowest on Jake Arrieta, and I moved him down again today.
Yeah, he's going to be in bust 2.0 for me. Just like it's going to take him so long to, at this point, if he does sign, beyond performance concerns, it's going to take him so long to get ready. But I don't want to just, by being silent on the matter, I don't want to totally co-sign to the Masahiro Tanaka love because I certainly understand where it comes from. The ratio suggests he should be better than he is, but two of the last 3 years, he's been pretty awful, and his environment doesn't help him. He's just so homer prone that, he seems like a guy whose ERA could get skewed very quickly.
Yeah, well, 2015, 3.51 ERA and a .99 WHIP, but that was the year where he just didn't have that many strikeouts, 139 strikeouts and 154 innings. You're right that we can't dismiss that two of the last 3 years have been kind of rough, but I think last year was awful. 2015 was okay.
I agree. Okay, I get 2015 is probably closer to his realistic worst-case scenario, and he had a 3.51 ERA and a whip under one.
All right. So then moving on after those two in round 9, we go over to round 9. You better have some pitchers at this point. because now it's really like there are some good pitchers here, but no, not a lot of certainties. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Berríos, Alex Wood, David Price, Kyle Hendricks, John Lester. Berríos, Alex Wood, David Price, Kyle Hendricks, John Lester. Of that group of five, who's your favorite and who's your least favorite?
My favorite would be Lester. My least favorite, I think, would be Hendricks.
Scott, favorite and least favorite out of Berríos, Wood, Price, Hendricks, Lester.
I'm going Lester. I know I have Lester ranked the highest. The one I'm most likely to draft. And I rarely see him go before Lester, even though I know ADP is showing otherwise here, is Alex Wood, because I feel like in terms of ERA and WHIP, he's much safer. You know, in a points league, I'd probably go Lester, I guess. But these are, of course, Roto ADP that we're looking at. And I trust him for a lower ERA and WHIP than Wood, than Lester. My least favorite is Hendricks, because I think there's the way the Cubs have used him have put a pretty clear innings cap on him as well.
Okay, I'll get back to that. Can I just say here, a little off topic. You guys both said Lester was your favorite. I really want Lester and Cueto on teams.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like both have really good bounce back potential. I think Lester was hurt by the World Series run, and I think there's a chance he bounces back, and Cueto gets drafted a lot later. Now, his walks were up, his ground balls were down, his hard contact was up, his velocity was down, but
it all looked like a pitcher who was losing it, but...
But he had the blisters all year.
Yeah, I feel better about Cueto because he had the blister all year.
I would say...
But with Lester, I feel like there's some real reason to wonder if the skills were diminished here, and maybe it was just because he was tired or whatever because the World Series run before, but, like, he's getting pretty old, and, like, you ignore these warning signs, you wind up with last year's Cole Hamels, you know?
It's true. I do like the discount, though. I mean, I kind of felt like... Like, even Price, you know, going after the first 100 picks, there's still a lot of good pitchers and good players on the board, but people are really downgrading these guys a lot. I mean, Cueto is going 141st overall. So I guess I'm just encouraged by the downgrades that, you know, that I can get them and still not have to pay up too much. Go ahead, Chris.
I'll say there's a four-way tie for second least favorite among this group, and my least favorite is Jose Berríos. I don't like any of them, especially at this price. I don't think Jose Berríos' draft price here makes any sense whatsoever. I think it's ridiculous.
Well,
like,
Ethan,
you're drafting him for 8 starts. Like, we're agreeing because his career numbers suck. His career numbers are bad.
But I just don't want to get into it again because we got into it yesterday.
All right, but I need to say my
Chris needs to have his voice heard.
We're all agreeing that we cannot look at his 2016. Fine. Throw those 14 starts away. Let's also throw the 8 starts where he was good last year out. And you're talking about a guy who had a 4.61 ERA in his final 18 games.
Well, let's throw those 18 games out, and now we have no data.
We have, yeah, but like that's kind of what we're saying we need to do with Jose Berríos. I'm fine. This is not disliking Jose Berríos as a pitching prospect. I think he can be pretty good.
As the 25th pitcher off the board,
I don't think we have any evidence that he's good.
25th pitcher off the board does feel a little early, like to just be hoping for a breakout. But we are talking about there's not one person that's being drafted after that is like completely, oh, yeah, he's going to be great. There's question marks everywhere. So Berríos, Wood, Price, Hendricks, Lester. Should we really care that much about the innings with Hendricks? Like, he's going to give you good numbers.
Yeah, I care about the innings for him because in a lot of these cases, the innings concerns are
injuries.
You expect him to miss. Spend some time on the DL for maybe just because the team wants to do the Dodgers thing and rest him for a while, whatever. But start for start, they're still capable of going 7. Joe Maddon never wants to let Hendricks go 7. And that, I mean, that lowers his ceiling from start to start in a way that makes
him... He gets crushed third time
out. That's the thing. It also lowers his ERA and his WHIP. And it might make it more likely for wins. Like, maybe
but
in Roto,
ERA
it's not as bad.
But the ERA valuable because...
But maybe in Roto, it's not as bad, Scott.
He's not a big strikeout pitcher, and it's just like, I'm not so sure I wouldn't rather have Dellin Betances for ERA and WHIP help, if that's really what we're drafting Hendricks for.
Well, you're still going to get more strikeouts from Hendricks than Betances.
Right, I don't think the value makes sense here for Hendricks.
All right, then, let's move on to our next group, which is... Round 10, Zach Godley, Rich Hill, Sonny Gray, Zach Godley, Rich Hill, Sonny Gray, Lance McCullers, and that's about it. Zach Godley, Rich Hill, Sonny Gray, Lance McCullers. Quick thoughts.
Well, you were just saying there's not anybody behind Jose Berríos who we feel pretty confident is going to be good. I would say I feel confident about all four of these being good.
But they all have question marks. There's no slam dunk.
Sure.
At this point.
I mean, there's no. Right. Like, if they didn't have question marks,
they'd be going.
I mean, we were saying Justin Verlander has question marks, you know? So.
They wouldn't be pitchers if they didn't have question marks.
Exactly. You know, I love Godley.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on from him. We talked about him yesterday.
Yeah.
Rich Hill's
somebody I find myself drafting a lot.
Yeah? Okay.
In categories leagues especially.
I guess it's interesting that Lance McCullers is, 45 picks behind James Paxton, right? Like, he's probably not quite as good as Paxton. But McCullers, before he got hurt, I mean, let me see. I got the stat here. First 13 starts before his DL stint, before his back injury, he had a 2.58 ERA. And well over a strikeout per inning, and actually pretty decent control for him. So does Lance McCullers also have potential, Lance McCullers, to be like a top 10 pitcher?
Yeah. Well,
I've been saying pretty much every time we've talked about him this offseason, and I think Chris co-signed to it, is I never expect him to go 180 innings. And so because there are still a couple dozen pitchers who are good for that, like, no, I don't think he has a reasonable chance of breaking into the top 10. Now, he may pitch like a top 10 pitcher when they let him pitch, but even that kind of fell apart as he accumulated innings last season. You know, accumulated to get to, where did he get to? 120, 140?
122.
122.
118 in the majors and 8 in the minors.
Yeah, but then he was really good in the postseason.
He was, yeah.
He had an ERA like 2.6, I think. And his FIP last year was still 3.10. I think when he's on the mound, I think Lance McCullers will be one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball.
All right. Well, after that, we are 33 pitchers in, and we are 10 rounds in. And now it's, here we go. Luke Weaver. Luke Weaver, 34th pitcher off the board, 123rd overall, followed by Marcus Stroman. They're the only pitchers going in round 11. Luke Weaver and Marcus Stroman.
That's a big nope.
Big nope. Okay.
And Marcus Stroman is tumbling since the shoulder inflammation.
Right.
And I think Stroman is maybe the pitcher that comes to mind, at least, that has much more value in points leagues than Roto. Because he doesn't help in ER, he doesn't help in whip, and he, like, not only does he not help, he's bad in whip, and he's bad in strikeouts. But he gives you a lot of innings.
That was definitely true until he had shoulder inflammation, and I don't know if you can count on him to give you a lot of innings.
So then, like, I would say you really got
to... You're not drafting him in this round, in this range.
Maybe in points, but definitely not in Roto. I just want everybody to know, in Roto leagues and categories leagues, Stroman is not as good as he is in points leagues. And that was before the shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally possible the shoulder thing is just spring over caution, you know?
Right.
Like, they haven't expressed any real concerns that he's going to be missing time with this. So,
and I will say... I don't think there's that big of a difference in talent between him and Dallas Keuchel. So I'm fine drafting him at the discount, either 120-ish when he's healthy, or I think I got him like 175th in a recent draft.
God, do you hate Dallas Keuchel? Okay.
I'd call him a poor man's Keuchel. I mean, the ground ball rate is almost as good. The strikeout rate is, you know, a little behind.
He's been better the last two seasons.
What
we do
you
have an
saying?
Update on our... We have an update on our site from yesterday on Marcus Stroman that does seem relevant. They have not set a timetable for him to resume throwing.
Mm-hmm.
The doctors feel good about it, but in our piece, it is speculated he seems a good bet to open the season on the disabled list.
All right. Okay, after
lack
Stroman.
Of readiness, but you know, like...
But that would miss time.
Yeah, but just because he's not quite ready, not real time.
We're talking about him in a range that you're not drafting.
Yeah,
right
yeah,
now.
He's not going to go here. He's not going to go
points
here.
In points leagues, you might. I'm with that.
I think he's still going five or six rounds later than this in points leagues.
Okay. Because of the injury. But if Stroman weren't injured, I would definitely take him in the 11th round in a points league. He's reliable.
You're taking him there in Roto.
He is a pitcher you're drafting because of his high floor, and that high floor doesn't exist when it has cracks in it.
All right, after him, we are at 36 pitchers here, and we are at 50 minutes. So let's go. Trevor Bauer, Luis Castillo... Gio Gonzalez, Johnny Cueto, Jeff Samardzija. Bauer, Castillo, Gio, Cueto, Samardzija. I'd like to have four pitchers by now and have these guys as my fifth. How do you guys feel about that?
I'm fine with Jeff Samardzija as my number two pitcher, especially in head-to-head points.
That is like, oh yep, my God. Agreed. Oh my God. Take. What are you saying? So this is why like the advanced stats people seem to just like skip over ERA, because like you dump on Dallas Keuchel and say that Jeff Samardzija, who once in his career as a starting pitcher has had an ERA better than 3.80.
Adam,
come on now.
I 100% agree with you. I would take Dallas Keuchel ahead of Jeff Samardzija.
Okay, but like,
he's going 70 or 80 spots ahead of
your
him.
Your number two pitcher? A guy who's had, like I said, an ERA under 3.80 once as a starting pitcher. Once.
Mm-hmm. In fairness, that's an arbitrary number. He's had an ERA under 3.82 three times.
He has?
Yes, he's had a 3.81 two different years.
And
as
you
a
know
starter?
What?
I was saying 3.80.
Okay, fine. So 380, you know, not arbitrary at all.
We talk about how scarce innings are. This is as close to a guaranteed 200 innings as you're going to get, including the top four. He's been durable. He's a strong striker. I've come so far around on Jeff Samardzija that last year I didn't want him at all. I think he's being, I'm not going to say he's undervalued. I think he is pretty close to properly valued for a guy who I think should win a decent amount of games, who's going to throw a ton of innings, who's going to get you a lot of strikeouts. He's going to hurt you probably in ERA. But even then, his peripherals suggest he's closer to a mid-threes ERA pitcher over the last 5 years.
Well, I mean, peripherals over 5 years.
That, but if you make him your number two starting pitcher, like you're committing to having a bad
my offense is really good. Yeah, that's...
But yeah. Offense is so deep now. I mean, that's the argument against this strategy of making Jeff Samardzija your number two. Like, you're not necessarily going to have that much of an advantage offensively over other teams because the waiver wire is going to have a lot more offense than it will pitching. Plus, like, you can talk about peripherals over 5 years. What about his actual stats over 5 years? They've been crap. So
he had, like, two really bad years over the last 5 years.
He's had one good year over the last 5 years. He's had one good year.
He's had one amazing year.
Yeah, that's it.
He's had two good years.
No, 3.80 ERA is not good.
That's
it's not
only
good.
Number that was bad, Adam.
But that's a huge number. That's a lot of runs you're giving
that
up. How can you be
one,
good?
Yes.
That's the most important number. That's the most important number. ERA
that
matters.
That is one of four pitching categories.
You're not even getting his biggest advantage if you're talking about categories, because his biggest advantage is innings. And that's not even a category.
You're still getting 200 plus strikeouts most years.
I wrote about Jeff Samardzija in my name brand sleepers piece this week, and I wouldn't quite like to have him as my number two in a points league. I think he's a high end number three in a points league. My argument for him is you should expect an ERA under four, even if it's not under 3.5. You should expect double digits, I would say 13 to 14 wins. He's going to throw you 200 innings, and he's going to be a good whip guy.
I don't hate Samardzija, honestly. Like, it's not. It's just that
he's 40th.
Number two, I don't know. He was 21st in points. He was 32nd in Roto last year. All right.
He was what in points last year?
21st.
So he was a number two.
So he was a number two starting pitcher.
Yeah, number two, but not on a per-inning basis. He threw 207 and two-thirds.
Which he does every year.
Okay. You're not going to have it consistently with him. You're not going to know. He's going to have this terrible month, and you're going to go, do I start Jeff Samardzija? And then he's going to throw eight shutout innings on your bench. He's not like as reliable as you're making him out to be. He never has been. All right. Anyway, my voice got
you're
way too high.
Like Dallas Keuchel.
Dallas Keuchel's had a sub-3 ERA in three of his last four seasons. Yet Jeff Samardzija is almost as good as Dallas Keuchel. Jeff
moving
Samardzija.
On.
Yes, moving on. So, John Gray. We're in the 40s now. John Gray, Danny Duffy, Michael Fulmer, Chase Anderson, and then forget about Danny Salazar. Gray, Duffy, Fulmer, Chase Anderson, Garrett Richards. Scott,
love
what do you
Gray.
Think? Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Love Gray, like Chase Anderson, don't like anyone else.
Yeah, Duffy and Fulmer are like the Dolly Parton of busts in this group.
What does that mean?
Moving on.
John Gray's interesting, guys. He's actually been better at home than on the road each of the last two seasons. He's good. He's very good.
He's not going to help you in ERA. Like, I think that's... You kind of have to look at him pretty similar to Jeff Samardzija. He just doesn't have the innings history, but, you know, he's not injury prone. He hurt his foot in spring training last year. That was the issue. But he was really good last year.
When did we say Sonny Gray? How many picks ago was that?
Sonny Gray was in a tier where we talked about everybody but him. He was with Godley, Rich Hill, and McCullers. I've got
John Gray and Sonny Gray back to back.
Scott, you want to jump in? You haven't spoken in a while.
Yeah, I definitely see the upside for John Gray, but I see a ton of downside too. I mean, the most obvious being in Colorado, and that probably puts a pretty low floor, I should say, on his ERA. It's weird because you're talking about a high number, but the other thing I've noticed with John Gray is for having a good K per nine last year, very low swinging strike rate. I mean, I've harped on Jose Barrios' swinging strike rate before, and John Gray's is even lower. And it's just like you're expecting a high ERA, you're scratching your head over the strikeouts, and he's at Coors Field. Like, there's other pitchers I can get more excited about.
Are we excited about Garrett Richards?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, he should go after John Gray, but, a big bat misser with a high ground ball rate. Coming back from injury, the innings are limited, but that's probably going to be true for all of these guys. So, yeah, I like Garrett Richards.
Okay. Next group, Richards. I put him in the other group, so whatever. Pomeranz, Dylan Bundy, Charlie Morton, Jameson Taillon. Pomeranz, Bundy, Morton, Taillon. Who do we like?
I love Charlie Morton, and I don't know why more people don't.
Just limited track record. He's only done it for really like one half of 1 year.
Which of the who are the right, names no, that's, you're mentioning?
I'm not.
Who are the other names?
They were Pomeranz, Bundy, Morton, and Taillon. And before that, Chase Anderson, Fulmer, Duffy.
Yeah, Taillon is by far and away my favorite out of this group.
I find that surprising because it doesn't seem like he's even an average strikeout pitcher in today's environment. Maybe just average.
I'm not sure.
And I know
there's...
Chris is high on him too. Like I think what Chris was saying about. Well, no, that's not.
I'm not sure there's any difference between Jameson Taillon and Kyle Hendricks.
That's fair, but we've already established I don't like Kyle Hendricks.
I'm not sure there's any difference between Jameson Taillon and Jose Barrios.
That's also fair, but we've also established I don't like Jose Barrios.
Right, but the whole thing is that you don't have to pay those prices for Jameson Taillon. And so if you don't, it's not about not liking Kyle Hendricks or not liking Jose Barrios. It's not liking them in the eighth round. But if you can get Jameson Taillon 50th at pitcher, 185th overall, there's a lot to like there because he's probably going to have a pretty low ERA. That's been what he's been his entire career until he came back from having cancer.
But the thing is, I like Charlie Morton and Chase Anderson more than all of the above. So, like, Jameson Taillon is not the guy I want to stump for here.
Charlie Morton and Chase Anderson were very good last year, and it was surprising. They hadn't been very good before. I do see a lot of five-inning starts from Charlie Morton, but I don't think you can get picky about innings at this point in the draft.
No.
Right? You're just
both of them had a big uptick in velocity last year, and changed their pitch selection in a way that obviously seemed more effective. So, like, you can point to changes that both of them made. Obviously, Morton has the Astros data mine backing him.
And started throwing his curveball more, and it was really effective. That was a big part of his success, too.
So I more or less buy both of them. I don't know that Anderson will be quite as good in ERA and whip as he was last year, but he'll be as good, if not better, than the rest of this group.
All right, I think we can stop the show today and at 50 pitchers, and we'll just kind of finish up with our favorite late-round picks. We're 200 picks into ADP at this point. We're 50 pitchers and 200 picks in. I think that's a pretty good place to stop because now we're really talking about bench pitchers for most fantasy owners. And we're going to talk about guys like Blake Snell and Jacob Faria and Mike Clevenger. They go in the next 20 picks, and we like them. And Denelson Lamed is there. It gets a little bit harder to find guys we like, but there will be plenty. But we're 50 picks in, and in a 10-team league with a five-man rotation, everybody's got their rotation, maybe. But like in a 12-team league with a five-man rotation, you have to go 60 picks deep. But if we could sum it up, I would like to have my rotation filled out by now, or very, very close.
It's not really possible if you're drafting with Scott because he's going to take three bench pitchers before.
I might already be working on my pitching bench in a head-to-head points league.
And I might be looking for my number four starter right now.
That's why I'll be in good shape.
There are multiple pitchers that we have not referenced that I am perfectly, or in fact, excited to have as a part of my rotation. Blake Snell, Taijuan Walker, Tanner Roark,
Kevin Gausman,
Mike Clevenger,
Kenta Maeda.
So, yeah, I'm perfectly fine with taking my four and five starters.
Assuming I have a bench, I probably still have five or six pitchers left to draft.
And it's you know, it's really just about philosophy, because I like those guys and I want them, but I don't want them on my, I don't want them to be in my starting rotation week one. I want them on my bench to see if I'm right about the breakout hunch, you know. So,
and to play matchups to, you know, capitalize on two-star weeks.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
Pitching is, even in a weekly league, starting pitcher is one of those positions where you use everybody on your roster, which, you know, in a weekly league, I'm not sure I'd say that for any other position.
And there are, I would say there are probably more than a dozen pitchers with top 20 upside left that we haven't talked about.
Good, good. So that gives us plenty for tomorrow. Tomorrow we will also announce the podcast league details, and you will start submitting to get into the podcast league. So that will be exciting, and I don't think we'll talk about Samardzija, but I will probably issue an on-air apology to Chris for losing my mind over Jeff Samardzija, who has been a very, very annoying pitcher for me.
You want to speed things up, and Chris says the most outlandish thing anybody said the whole show. So, of course, we have to unpack it.
Right, I did, right? Yeah.
It was a perfectly reasonable thing to say.
It was very, like,
half of the show agreed with it.
It was the most Chris Towers thing you could do, because what you did was take a very perfectly reasonably, actually good fantasy baseball take, Jeff Samardzija is underrated, and frame it in a way that makes almost everyone argue against it.
half of the show
kind
agreed
of
with it.
Yeah, like, that's kind of true, because there are things to like about Samardzija, but as your number two pitcher, who on earth is doing that other than the wonderful Chris
Towers? The guy
Chris
with a really
Towers.
Good offense.
Yeah, the only person in the prime demographic for advertisements agreed with it. So I think I win the popular vote. The popular vote's tied. I think I win the Electoral College. I think that's how this works.
Congratulations.
So any statement you make is the prevailing statement as far as advertising.
Because you're not 30 yet? Is that it? Once you turn 30, then you're on even ground with us?
Are we sure that 21 to 30 is a better market than 31 to 40?
Yeah, yeah, we buy stuff.
Turns 30, he needs to be replaced.
What do you buy? We buy things.
Wow.
Yeah, come on. All right. Well, now this podcast is off the rails. We'll talk to you tomorrow with we'll wrap up starting pitcher. And I think we'll recap all of the positions, kind of sum up everything and read a lot of your emails and have a lot of fun. See you later.